And what?
Sorry about
And,
that.
no problem. And what do I need to let go of? So what do I want to abide? Where do I want to abide? And what do I need to let go of? And when we ask these questions, we need to turn toward our heart for the answers. As Shakespeare said, go to your bosom, knock there, and ask your heart what it doth know. So when I was thinking about ritual and devotion this month and why I was drawn to ritual, I've always been drawn to ritual, and it probably helps that I did not grow up in a religion, so I didn't have to push away from any particular religion. But I wanted to belong to a religion, and I really liked the, I would go to churches with my friends to see if I could, you know, find something that really resonated with me. And I didn't find anything except I liked the Catholic Church. And when I went to the Catholic Church, it was in Latin. So I didn't have, you know, hear any of the content, none of the dogma. I just could kind of benefit from the candles and the incense and the sound of the Latin and the bells. And why did that attract me? I was wondering. So what came to me was the two truths, the two realities. And so that's what I'm going to talk mostly about today. But I'll start it with something Carrie said on Monday night, and Lyndall repeated at her talk at the Sunday sit. They were referring to another teacher's comment that we Buddhists are devotees of reality. And that really resonated with me. And I think it may have resonated with others of us. And it makes me think of the ritual of taking refuges in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, because the refuge in the Dhamma is refuge in the truth of the way things are. And it also makes me think of the Four Noble Truths, because the Four Noble Truths starts with the truth that there is suffering. So truth and reality are very important in Buddhism. I agree with that. But here comes the center point of my talk. There's more than one reality. The thing about reality is that from our study of dependent origination last year, we learned that there is not just one reality. Each of us perceives reality based on our conditioning. And although through name and form and the development of concepts, we come to agreements about reality that help us function in the world. But reality is relative. This reality is relative. And then there's another way of looking at reality. In addition to the individual way perception shades our reality, there are two very important levels or types of reality described in Buddha suttas. You may have heard of relative reality and absolute reality. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how those are described in the suttas. In the second century AD, a Buddhist monk, Nagarjuna, wrote the fundamental verses of the Middle Way. And in it, he said, the Dharma taught by the Buddhas relies on two truths, ambiguous truths of the world and truths of sublime meaning. Those who do not understand the difference between these two truths cannot understand the profound reality of the Buddha's teaching. So what do relative and absolute truths or realities have to do with ritual and devotion in daily life? For me, the fact that there are two basic realities has a lot to do with what has drawn me to ritual specifically, and why I think ritual and devotion practices can support our deepest spiritual aspirations. The other day I just happened upon a note I had written on the back of a handout at a retreat in 2012. And the note said, spirituality doesn't work unless you have both the form and the formless. I'm pretty sure that that quote came from Rodney Smith, our founding teacher. When I read it, I thought, yes, that's why religious ritual, which integrates form and formless, supports our spiritual intentions. And to me, ritual does integrate, helps me integrate the form and the formless. And it tells me, you know, there is something else in this world. There is something that I can't explain, that is mysterious, that is formless. In his book, Stepping Out of Self-Deception, Rodney describes two perpendicular universes. One, the horizontal universe, is the one we are aware of most of the time. It is the relative or conventional one. And it's characterized by the divisions of past, present, and future. It's conditioned and time-driven and familiar to our linear left brain. The vertical universe is the domain of the heart, the one also called absolute. It's unconditioned and timeless. It's more accessible through the intuitive right brain. The point where the two universes cross, Rodney calls the zero point. And the zero point is the present, where we can connect to the unconditioned and know, as Hafiz says, Sue's quoted this in her talk, now is the time to know that whatever you do is sacred. All we have to do is pause. Rodney says in his book, quote, occasionally we pause sufficiently to see the intersection of these two dimensions and not merely think our way past them. It may be a moment of wonder, mystery, beauty, or a moment too precious to deny. And when Dane read the poem this morning, I thought of that as a zero point the poet was talking about. So we need to be devoted to what? I think we need to be devoted to both realities, the conventional relative with all its impermanence, which we can describe and explain, and the absolute, unconditional, inexplicable, and mysterious reality, and hold them both. Well, where does ritual come in? Rituals help us pause and remind us of the importance of the sacred and the inexplicable and the formless. It's easy to get bogged down in what Carey called the agendas of the small self, all the tasks we think are so important. Rituals remind us also because they're repetitive, and they also have elements that draw out the non-linear, non-thinking part of our mind and remind us that the heart has its reasons that reason doesn't know. They touch the domain of intuition and insight with their symbols and invite an embodied response. Sometimes ritual is just what the heart needs. So I'm going to give you an example. For me, last November, on the night of the election, I was frightened by what the outcome of the election might be. I was hating the people who might get in the way of the outcome I wanted, and I couldn't sleep. And I thought, what can I do? And I remembered I was taking a class from the Buddhist Study Society in Barrie, Massachusetts, on pilgrimage. And I remembered our teacher had shown us a video of the Dalai Lama making a pilgrimage to the Mahabodhi Temple in Bodh Gaya, which is where the Buddha was enlightened. And I turned off the news and found that video. And there was the temple, the monks chanting the refuges in Pali. Buddham, Samnam, Saranam Gachami. The Dalai Lama was in his maroon and yellow robes, bowing to the people, and the people were bowing to him. The people were chanting and spinning prayer wheels, touching their prayer beads. Flowers decorated the way to the temple, where the Dalai Lama would honor and offer gratitude to the statue of the Buddha. Well, to the Buddha, but there was a statue. Inside the temple, the candles, there were candles and more prayers. And in the background, the chanting continued. Buddham, Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Sangham Saranam Gacchami. I was able to let go of my fear and my aversion and reconnect to devotion to something greater than myself, to remember my deepest values of wisdom and compassion. The Dalai Lama was speaking to the reporters saying, all religions carry the same message of love, forgiveness, tolerance. And he was saying also that modern science was learning mutually with religion. Everything is interdependent. Nothing exists independently, he said. So, ritual can point us in the direction of liberation and help keep us on the Eightfold Path. When we remember the first step of the Eightfold Path, that of wise view, that there is an interconnection with all life, remembering the second step of the Eightfold Path of right thought, or sometimes called right intention, which calls upon us to renounce actions that are harmful, unwholesome, or unskillful, which calls upon us to incline our mind toward loving kindness and compassion. Rituals can cultivate the Brahma Viharas of metta, or friendliness, karuna, or compassion, mudita, or sympathetic joy, upekkha, or equanimity. And when we offer phrases like, may you be safe and protected, we can broaden our circle of connection to extend toward boundless love. May all beings be free from suffering. Or when we say the dedication of merit, remembering that our practice is never for ourselves alone. With rituals, we can have a structure that can help us change our habit patterns. The Buddha says, bhikkhus, whatever a bhikkhu frequently thinks of and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of the mind. So ritual can help us incline our mind in non-harming, wholesome, and skillful ways. The last thing I want to bring up is that we can make our rituals personal. As has already been pointed out this month and in previous talks, there's not a big emphasis on ritual in Theravada Buddhism, our lineage, but there is opportunity for each of us to develop our own rituals to support our aspirations, because the Buddha said, see for yourself. And two of the ways that I have found sacredness through ritual is through poetry and nature. And I don't think it's a coincidence that so many Dharma talks and guided meditations start or end with a poem. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Buddha sat down under a tree to awaken. My guess is that many of you may already see the sacred in poetry or in nature, and see how the two truths of form and formless intersect in nature and in poetry. and help us to hold both truths. I'm thinking that it's not just poetry and nature. Those have been very helpful domains to me, but I'm thinking also of like dance, Sufi dance. So there's many other domains that we can enter into and see the integration of the temporal, horizontal, and the vertical, timeless form and the formless. And it can take your breath away, I think. So let's pause for a moment right now. And allow a little stillness. And let the ideas of the two realities, do those make sense to you at all? Can you think of the sacred places in your daily life? And your devotion to them? And I'm going to close with a poem. And my apologies go to Carrie because she read the same poem Monday night. But when she read it, I didn't understand it. And I was looking through my pile of poems to think, what poem will I read with my talk? And I saw her poem and I read it again and I thought, oh my gosh, that goes with the two truths. And I hadn't seen that. So I'm going to read her poem again. And it's called The Second Music by Annie Lightheart. Now I understand that there are two melodies playing, one below the other. One easier to hear, the other lower, steady, perhaps more faithful for being less heard, yet always present. When all other things seem lively and real, this one fades, yet the notes of it touch as gently as fingertips, as the sound of the names laid over each child at birth. I want to say in that music, I want to stay in that music without striving to cover. If the truth of our lives is what is playing, the telling is so soft that this mortal time, this irrevocable change becomes beautiful. I stop and stop again to hear the second music. I hear the children in the yard, a train, then birds. All this is in it and will be gone. I set my ear to it as I would to a heart. Thank you very much for being here this morning. And this is a time where we will break into breakout groups. And if you would need to leave or would like to leave, you can unmute yourself and say goodbye, or you can say goodbye in a chat. And the rest, I'll give you a minute to do that. And the rest of you, I'll put into breakout groups. Okay. There will be about three people in a group, and I'll give you, we've got a lot of time, so I'll give you 20 minutes. And the question I was thinking of is, how do you find the sacred in everyday life? And do you have any rituals that you associate with the sacred any that you've created yourself or any that you have blended or follow. And so I will give you a message when you have 5 minutes left, and you'll have about 20 minutes. Okay. Okay, I think everybody's back. So would anybody like to share out something that you talked about in your groups? You can just raise your hand with the little reactions button, or you can just go like that. Let's see if there's, I think we're all in one screen now. So if you'd like to share anything. Okay. Mark, can you unmute yourself? Yes. Okay.
That should be unmuted, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So we just talked a little bit about different things we do in our daily lives, or maybe not daily, but semi-regularly. And some of us, we weren't totally positive what a ritual exactly was, you know, like the definition. So we looked it up, but I looked it up. But I think we got a pretty good feel of it, you know. So we even talked about like walking the dog in a park every morning. That was one thing. Cooking food. And we were saying we kind of have this image of ritual. Like you said, the Catholic Church, we think of like incense and candles and really religious type stuff, but that it can be a lot more than that or totally different from that. So I was thinking when I go hiking and camping, like that's a ritual for me. And then also journaling and obviously meditating.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking that that just, you know, anything that slows us down and connects us to the present moment and connects us to what we honor and value. I wasn't thinking of the dictionary definition of ritual specifically, but just discovering and investigating what is ritual and where does something become something that connects us to something greater or something, a deeper value. And so that's what I was encouraging to you to do, and it sounds like you did. And the fact that everything can be sacred, that our daily life, that's kind of one of the things, a devotee of reality, you know, if you value that, then you can look for it and look for ways to honor it. Thank you for sharing that. Does anybody else want to share something? Lindell. Can you unmute Lindell?
Yeah, Lauren, we also really appreciated what you said about ritual being a reminder to us to slow down and to actually connect. Because in our group, we all talked about how we sort of recognize that sacred in everyday life, but we just forget about it because we're too busy to slow down and take it in. And you know, there was some, you know, talk about actually sitting in the garden and taking it in without doing anything, going for a walk and noticing what was there without worrying about it as getting my exercise done. And so this sense of the rituals helping us to actually slow down enough to pay attention was really helpful.
Thank you, Lyndall. Yeah, I was thinking about that too, as far as when I think of a ritual, it's always slow. You know, it's always careful. It's so when then we have time to really reflect about the meaning of what we're doing and what we value. And, you know, I think slowing and pausing is a big part of ritual. So thanks for bringing that up. And because tasks, you know, the thing about tasks, we want to go on to the next thing. We have such a task orientation. You got to finish this and then you start the next thing. So I was thinking of the tea ceremony in Japan, and I haven't really seen one, but the idea of it, that people would take such care with something so every day that you could be so careless with. And a person I had a breakout room with this month talked about, she's single, and she talked about being at home in the during the pandemic and not working, and that she would spend a lot of time on her meal, making it for herself, making it really nice, setting the table, and just making it a really nice ritual, which to me shows a value for yourself, you know, a caring for yourself. And she said she really would think of how grateful she was that even though she wasn't working, probably shouldn't be sharing somebody else's story, but I'm not saying her name, so there's anonymity. And I just thought it really stood out for me where she talked about how she took that care and made that a ritual. I wonder if anybody else found, oh, yes, Bob, could you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I don't want to jump ahead of Sheila. I think she had her hand.
Oh, did she? Where's Sheila? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Thank you, Bob. I just wanted to say that I would like to put the small breakout groups. Oh, are we getting a lot of feedback? Into the realm of ritual.
Yes.
Because to me, there's a lot of care, attention, slowing down, really, you know, focusing, whatever. And they are so rich. You know, and it just occurred to me during, you know, that was a beautiful ritual that we have. And, you know, there's so much to be gained from that. That was all. Was just
yes. Oh, I love that, because there's also such honoring in the breakout groups. People really listen to each other and they honor, you know, they honor their being. Yeah. Which is pretty certainly an aspiration, I think, a spiritual aspiration. So thank you for sharing that, Sheila. I agree with you. Bob?
I just have been taking sort of a contrarian view of ritual, I guess, lately. Because I went to a giant family wedding a few weekends ago back in Wisconsin, and it was quite explosive, but it was also a giant ritual. And everybody's been to weddings, and they are an important ritual. And I've been thinking about ritual not in such a benign way or positive way all the time, but I think, and I've also, I'm a teacher, so I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking about teaching the classroom experience as a kind of ritual. And how it's kind of a structured sort of awareness of unknowing and you kind of venture into it. Most of us venture into ritual thinking that it's going to structure things and make us feel better. But sometimes I think it makes us feel worse, at least in the moment. And there is, it's kind of a container, I think, can be kind of a container to hold a lot of energies. And so I've been thinking about my daily practice as a container for energies, and not just the big social rituals like weddings or funerals or baptisms or whatever, but I think I've been thinking about it more as something you venture into with the attitude that I don't necessarily know what energy is here. And I might not come out of it feeling happy or settled or grounded. So I've been thinking about, and I don't have an answer or, but I'm just thinking about ritual as this kind of, container, that, anyway, maybe someone else has thoughts about that too. I don't know.
Does anyone, I have something I could say, but I'd see if anybody else wants to, respond to Bob's, investigation, it sounds like.
Hi, this is Trinity. Yes. I wanted to respond because I grew up in a big family of 13. So getting into the car was a disorganized ritual because it would take us at least an hour because not everybody would be ready. Half the kids would be asleep by the time they get loaded in. But you also needed to know your place. So this is in the days before you had seat belts, right? So mom and dad in the front seat, and then the middle child in the middle, and a baby, whoever the baby is, on somebody's lap. That's four. One, two, three, four. And then four kids on the back seat. That's eight. And then two in the well between them. That's eight, nine, ten. And the rest have to go into the trunk, because you don't have room, right? But they have to get loaded in. And so the kids needed to know where they fit, because otherwise they're not happy. Said, wait a minute, that's not my place. You're in my place. Oh, okay, you're right. You go on the seat and you go in the well. Okay, you're right. And so the reason I say that is that human society needs structure and habit that gets ritualized over time creates a calm. Trying to load 13 people into a car is, you know, requires calm, because you can't just, you know, throw everybody in. And so I think there's a, what human nature craves structure, and then we can ritualize it. Usually after one or two times, and then the kids say, okay, this is how we do it. And so I just wanted to throw that in, because I think it's part of human nature to create ritual out of the necessity to have to live together in a very simple way. That's what I have to say.
Thank you very much, Trinity. I think investigating ritual is really can bring us a lot of can be insight, because I think we do have ritual. And so one ritual may be really, I was talking about a ritual, thinking about, well, what makes it something that's going to further me on the path, my spiritual path. But there is a lot of everyday ritual. And like I was sharing about the person who was making the meal for herself, there's just a variety of elements to ritual, aren't there? And having a peaceful, safe, calm, as you said, Trinity, way to do something in your daily life, that does certainly have a skillful and wholesome advantage, doesn't it? And then Bob is talking about maybe the container might be too tight, or, you know, block certain energies, or maybe a ritual needs to be flexible. Maybe we need to keep examining rituals. So seems to be a fact of life, and also an element of, can be an element of our spiritual path. And it's kind of interesting to be looking at it. And maybe, Bob, you'll share with us later on what you discover about the ritual of teaching. And Lillian and Nikhil. Oh, we need to stop. Well, we'll just say, you share and then we'll stop.
Cool. Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, Bob, I found your comment really, your observation about rituals to be interesting. And I think something that came up in our group discussion was kind of what's the difference between a ritual and a routine. And someone offered that a ritual might be something where there's more of a mindful or meditative aspect to it, and you're more aware of, you're more aware of what you're doing than you would be with a routine. And I think, Lauren, what you had said about it being something that kind of connects you to something, you know, a core value or something more deeply, a deeply held belief. I think that's, you know, a useful distinction or definition as well. And I think in the context of certain things that, like, in society that we might do, like funerals or weddings and things like that, I wonder how much is there a routine versus ritual, and how aware are we of sometimes things we do as routine that might feel like ritual, but are we actually kind of like mindful, aware of like why we do some of the things that we do? So yeah, just some of the thoughts I had from you kind of.
Thank you, Gail.